Let's see. You think you're the only one that can do that?
Welcome to That's Good Sports Podcast. I'm Brandon Perna here with William Keyes, number one AOK podcast co-host out of Sacramento, California, in a Berkeley shirt with the Von Miller thing in his background. Keyes.
You nailed it.
Got it. This is That's Good Sports Podcast. Today we're going to talk about the Denver Broncos, even though there's not a lot to talk about. And of course, we've got NFL, Super Bowl. We know who's going to play in the Super Bowl, is what I'm trying to say. And a lot of shit happened leading up to this Super Bowl matchup between the Los Angeles Rams and the other team. But I don't even fucking – their names I don't even want to say anymore because
Kansas
I am –
Kansas City Chiefs.
Yes, the Chiefs. So we'll jump into that. The bad reffing, New Orleans wanting a rematch, Sean McVay having a pullback guy, whatever we want to talk about. There's a lot. But we've got 2 weeks. We've got a whole nother podcast that's going to go up before the actual Super Bowl. So we'll try not to overload you with football gasm.
Yeah, no, this is the time of the year where, like, if we're ever struggling to fill time in a podcast, which, of course, we would never do. We always have stuff to talk about. Think about the people that have to do, like, 3-hour radio shows every day leading up to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Think about Denver radio, where they have to talk about the Broncos for 3 hours every day.
Correct. Yeah, and because it's not like there's two other playoff teams in that city.
No. We would never, ever discuss.
Three, I think, actually. I don't know about hockey, so.
You know what's funny is, like, a lot of people complain about I think a lot of, like, savvy sports fans, obviously, they complain about, like, the fan out here not really talking about anything but the Broncos. But I'm the type of person who all I really want to hear about is the Broncos. I'm not going to listen to 3 hours of it, you know what I mean? But give me 10 or 15 minutes of anything for the Broncos every day and I'm good to go. And then I'll take some Nuggets news like once a week and I'm all right. That's how I could get by with sports.
Yeah, no, it's like your blue and orange pill is like this big and you've got a small little Nuggets pill that you take once a week and then you're good.
Yeah, and neither of them get me into the Matrix, which is...
No. Why I use that pill analogy, but I think it's because I've been reading this book about the Third Reich and how they're all taking meth when they invaded France.
Oh, weird.
That was one of the big reasons that they invaded a whole fucking country in like a week. So.
Wow. From meth, huh?
Yeah, well, you don't sleep, you know? You can just go for like a week without sleeping.
Well, and then you watch A Beautiful Boy, and that's about meth too. So
I know.
I think you should try meth. Might have to try it.
Yeah, we'll do that on the podcast next week. Live meth tutorial.
Anybody looking for a really good but depressing movie about a beautiful boy is good. Wasn't that actor in the other movie about a boy? Wasn't that last year?
About a boy. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, the guy who played Nick was in
Timothée Chalamet.
Yeah, he was in a film last year called About a Boy, I believe.
It's possible, yeah. I know he was in Lady Bird and he's in Call Me by Your Name.
He's in Lady Bird.
And then obviously, Steve Carell's in that movie. And the funny thing is, like,
Call Me by Your Name. You're right. About a boy, Hugh Grant.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's Hugh Grant and, like, Nicholas Holt, who was in The Favorite this year and was really good. So
Call Me by Your Name is why I thought was About a Boy.
I switched the inputs to get back from Amazon back to regular cable. And so I went from Beautiful Boy starring older Steve Carell. And it was on Comedy Central, and they're playing reruns of The Office. So I got younger, zero gray-haired Steve Carell, which was very shocking.
Yeah, Steve, he looks better with gray hair, I think, almost like.
Yeah.
Distinguished.
Able to take him more I'm able to take him much more seriously.
Yeah, there was one point in Beautiful Boy where Steve Carell starts yelling.
Yeah.
And it's that same inflection from when he would. funny mad on The Office, and I laughed, and it was not like a laughable scene.
Yeah.
And my wife kind of looked at me. I was like, I'm sorry. I started to imagine him as, you know, Michael Scott when he was yelling in that tone.
Yeah, he was yelling at his ex-wife about their son who had gone missing for like 3 days over the phone. Yeah, so yeah. I thought the same exact thing though, so you're not alone.
Well, that's good. I'm not a horrible person.
No. So we've got some Broncos news. It's funny because I texted you, like, is there anything to talk about? And then you hit me with like five different things proving that there's always something to talk about.
Always something. No, I mean, none of it's really that important.
No, no. It just depends on what you really think is newsworthy.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, our bar is pretty low.
It is. We're approaching appropriate quarterback talk time for the Broncos. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
That could happen in free agency. So let's lead off with that, Will.
Yeah. So Mike Kliss tweeted something about the Broncos are going to keep an eye on two quarterbacks, two former Super Bowl MVPs, both with last names starting with the letter F, Nick Foles and Joe Flacco. I don't know about this. I personally think that going from Case Keenum to either of these two guys is a lateral move that wouldn't really be worth the time and effort, especially for Flacco. I think Foles, you could at least make the argument that there's more to be mined from Nick Foles, but I think Flacco, I don't know, I'd let another team worry about that kind of as a bridge quarterback. What do you think? If you gun to your head, you have to take Nick Foles for, let's say, I don't know, $25 million a year versus Joe Flacco for $18 million a year, each for like 2 years. Who do you take?
So, I mean, I think I'd take Nick Foles. I think that's an easy decision. Both Super Bowl winners.
Yes.
You know, is a thing. But Nick Foles was Super Bowl MVP. He then kind of revived the Eagles this year, got a playoff win for the Eagles. And I think if you're bringing in Rich Scangarello, who's supposed to be very good with quarterbacks, and you believe that, then, you know, I like, what's the knock on Foles is that he's only able to succeed with Doug Peterson, basically.
Yeah,
with
the Andy Reid style offense.
Right.
And which isn't true because he had his best year with Chip Kelly. But
yeah, I mean, that was Peyton Manning's crazy year where he throws 7 touchdowns and breaks the record in a game. And then a few weeks later, Nick Foles throws 7 touchdowns in a single game. He had, what, 2 interceptions that entire season?
Yeah, he was 27-2 touchdown interception.
Do you think Chip Kelly just came into the NFL a couple years too early? Like, I feel like his offense, everybody would want Chip Kelly right now. His problem was probably trying to be too powerful or some
shit. Yeah.
I didn't follow it close enough, but I feel like everybody's just doing like or wanting what Chip Kelly was trying to bring to the Eagles, you know, in 2013, 20, whenever the fuck that was.
Yeah, it got a little annoying, though, with Chip Kelly and his offense just because like, he goes 10-6 his first year. They have a good year. I think they actually went 10-6 his second year, too, but they missed the playoffs. I think he just rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, which was probably his greatest downfall. Like, by the end of his Eagles tenure, like, I know most of the locker room had turned against him, like LeSean McCoy, who I think he ended up trading.
Yeah.
And then, like, guys like DeSean Jackson, like there are rumors about him like being kind of a racist, which I don't know how much credence I would actually give to that. But I don't know. It's never like once you've already had that accusation hurled against you as an NFL coach, like the damage is pretty much done. And of course, he only lasted a year in San Francisco, which is never a good sign either.
Didn't he trade? Was Kiko Alonso part of the trade for LeSean McCoy?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he traded he made that trade, and then he made the I think he made the Bradford for Foles trade to St. Louis.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. So I would take Nick Foles, but like the Broncos options at this point are cut Keenum, sign Foles, and then maybe draft a guy whenever the fuck they want. Keep Keenum, draft a guy at 10. Keep Keenum, trade up to draft a guy earlier than 10. Keep Keenum, draft a guy later. I just feel like if you're going into this season, some people, I think, believe the new offensive coordinator is going to be more friendly to Case Keenum. So maybe the Broncos front office is less worried about bringing in a free agent and just want to focus on drafting a guy. And I think the consensus now is the Broncos are definitely going to draft a quarterback. So it's just like, who is that guy going to be and when are they going to take a quarterback?
I can tell you exactly who that is going to be. And I'll tell you the year too. Arch Manning, 2027 with the first overall pick, which hopefully the Broncos didn't earn by themselves, but they actually just traded up. Have you seen this video of Cooper Manning's son, Arch Manning?
Yeah, throwing out routes and
yeah,
shit.
Throwing out routes, some deep balls. He looks really good.
Yeah, they should. They need to get him and Phillip Rivers' kid and do a video of them doing like a little quarterback camp.
Yeah, I assume that I don't know if Phillip Rivers' son. Like, I don't know if that throwing motion is genetic. I'm assuming it's not because I think like Phillip Rivers' brother threw like a normal person and not an idiot. But Arch Manning, like if you look at him, he's got like the same like follow through as both Peyton and Eli. So it's just strange to watch, but
yeah,
I can't remember the last time an eighth grader was given an offer by a Power 5 school, but Tennessee wants to lock up their guy early.
That's insane. And it's Cooper's son?
Yeah, this is Cooper's son, Peyton and Eli's nephew.
And supposedly Cooper was the most athletic of, like, all the Manning kids, right?
Yeah, he played wide receiver.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
It was kind of the alpha before he got hurt.
Can you imagine if this kid Arch has like the cerebral capability of Peyton and then is actually not like mobile, but like mobile enough where he can move around like Aaron Rodgers-ish, like a poor man's Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah.
Could you imagine like how good Peyton Manning would have been if he was going to bounce outside the pocket from time to time and then sidearm a throw to the other side of the field?
Yeah, no, it's the best quarterback I can ever imagine, I think. I want him on my team.
That's right.
I don't think Tennessee deserves him, though. I don't want him to go to Tennessee. I don't want him to go to Ole Miss. I think he should hold out for, like,
Boise
Clemson.
State.
Boise State would be fine. like a good Pac-12 team, maybe. Why not go to CU? Peyton Manning still lives in Denver, you know. Go to Boulder.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
Spend weekends at Uncle Peyton's house.
Well, maybe he would have done that had John Elway called him the best quarterback ever.
Yeah, that's a good segue. That's
yeah, I'm learning the biz, Will. I'm learning the podcast biz.
God, we are plowing through this.
And let me tell you how a Manning could end up at CU. After this.
After a word from our sponsors.
Then there are commercials, and then we tell them.
Yeah. Well, do we get that that barbecue, that grill sponsor
the
yet?
Traeger?
Yeah, the Traeger.
Yeah, got to get that Traeger.
Nope. I can smell it already. Dude, Traeger.
You had no idea. Even Peter Schrager referenced the Traeger grill today on Twitter.
God damn it. I don't follow him. Yeah, so Elway got asked about the Patriots-Chiefs game when he was at the Senior Bowl because he's doing like his week-long scouting thing with Matt Russell at the Senior Bowl, which I think he does every year. And he referred to Tom Brady as the greatest quarterback. I don't think he said like greatest quarterback ever. It was like I think he just used the words greatest quarterback. It could be currently, could be all time.
Yeah, he said something like continues to be what he is, the greatest quarterback.
He could be the greatest quarterback. Yeah, greatest quarterback on the Patriots 53-man roster.
Dude, if I was Dante Culpepper, I would never say somebody else was a better quarterback than me.
No, I think like
I think I was getting
like
stopped.
Chad Pennington up.
Yeah,
I just immediately, you know, be like a self-promoting, like, yeah, I should be in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. This was all right. Which is a more ludicrous take? Brady, the greatest quarterback ever, or him saying that all pass interferences should be reviewable?
Elway saying they shouldn't? He said they shouldn't.
Should. All pass interferences, though.
No, I think –
they should all be reviewed. That's what he said.
I thought he said they shouldn't be reviewed, Will.
Is that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
That's a pretty big difference.
You really locked down this podcast. Let me see here. Pass, enter.
We're doing so well.
Yeah, John Elway says expanding replays for pass interference won't work.
God damn it. Well, all right. Let me amend that question. What's worse, him saying that Brady is the greatest quarterback or no pass interference call should ever be reviewable?
They're both bad. They're both bad takes.
You disagree with both?
Yeah. You know I disagree with the first one. You know what's funny?
Yeah, I know.
You know what's funny is, like, after this Chiefs win, I feel like two things are happening. Like, people in the media are feeling like they definitely need to say Tom Brady is the greatest ever more.
Yeah.
And there are people who would refuse to admit it and then are now finally starting to admit it for the first time.
Well, here's the thing. Like, we've crossed that, and, like, now people are talking about, like, whether he's the best athlete of all time, just, like, in any sport.
He's not even the best athlete
preposterous.
The last 20 years.
No, I know. It's so, like, plainly simple for rational people to see. But, like, I'm not saying that he would be a bum anywhere else, but, like, he's a pretty scheme-dependent quarterback. He plays with a great defense every single year. He plays with the greatest coach every year. He's got a Hall of Fame tight end. Like, it's just, like, it doesn't make him – it doesn't nullify all the success. Just, like, I don't think he will ever be, you know – the best ever do it.
That's no, because like we've talked about there, I don't think there can ever be a best ever because certain quarterbacks do certain things better than others. Obviously he's the best ever at winning Super Bowls. Can't argue that.
Yeah. He's the most accomplished. That's just, you know,
I think
those are the facts.
I think his best skill and I think it's what we've kind of seen Nick Foles do. Did we already talk about this? Like, I think his best skill is that, He just plays the game the same no matter what's at stake.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't get rattled. And that's when good quarterbacks become, like, flawed. Is like, in the fourth quarter – like, Phillip Rivers is a really good example of a guy I feel like 3.5 quarters usually plays great football, and then when the game's on the line, you're either going to get a good performance or he's going to throw a fucking interception. He's going to do something stupid, like – that's why he doesn't have more success, I feel like, late in the season or in the playoffs or whatever. Brady's like, it's just the same all the fucking time for him. And that's not even an athletic skill. That's a mental thing. And mentally, maybe he's pretty good, but, like, I don't know. It's weird. That's like, well, that's what I take away anytime I watch the Patriots. And it's not even just him. It's like everybody on that team plays great when the game's on the line. Like, their offensive line was fucking amazing in the fourth quarter and overtime.
He's been sacked zero times in two playoff games against two pretty good defensive fronts.
Against one defensive front that tied the Steelers for most sacks this season. It's a defense that was so good, their defensive coordinator got fired this week, and Bob Sutton.
Yes.
So – it's uncanny how well prepared that team is every season. And it's like, to me, when I think about it, and just try, like, trying to take away my hate, my bias from it. It's like, I just always go back to Belichick and how I think what he's done is what blows my mind. You know what I mean? And yes, Tom Brady's like, been in the game long enough where you're not going to surprise him. And that's most good quarterbacks who've played in the league for more than 10 years. You're not fucking fooling them at the line of scrimmage anymore.
Right. And like, that's where, like, you'll get no argument from me that Belichick is the greatest coach, I think, ever. And that's probably by a pretty wide margin too.
Yeah.
Obviously, like, there are guys that came before him that he wouldn't exist without. Like, you know, Bill Walsh creating the West Coast offense when he was with the Bengals, and then with Parcells, who he clearly took some influence from defensively. But in terms of, like, putting both of those schemes together and creating a team that's gone to now 9 Super Bowls in the last 18 or 19 years, I'm comfortable with saying that. Brady, on the other hand, there's just too many variables, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. And then, like, if you don't say he's the greatest, people just think you're an asshole. So,
right.
Like, it's I was listening to, I think, Dan Patrick talk about him the next day. And usually, like, I like Dan Patrick's takes. But I feel like what he did late in the Chiefs game was impressive. Overtime was impressive for the most part. But, again, I watched through that – the last 10 minutes and the overtime the next day. And I'm seeing more of just a team performing. I'm seeing a team that can rush for 3 final touchdowns. I can see Tom Brady making pretty good throws with no fucking pass rush around him. I see Chris Hogan make a one-handed grab that he shouldn't have made, that if he doesn't get his hand on that ball, is going to get picked off by the Chiefs' safety. I see an interception that's, you could debate, not a great throw to Gronk that gets called back because Dee Ford's lined up offsides. Like, the one thing that there's no explanation for is the Patriots, the ball bounces their way more than
it does
most teams.
No, like, that's a fact. You go back to every – you could go back to pretty much all of their major accomplishments and say that they got, like, just a tremendous stroke of luck.
Yeah.
That when you put it all together, it's just so uncanny and bizarre.
Like, you can say that, and it doesn't mean they're not good, but it's, like, it's an accurate observation of a contributor to their success.
Yeah, like, obviously you have to get that – you don't get that far in the season by being lucky. It's just – it does feel like, you know, every single time. Like, you go back to their first Super Bowl and the tuck rule. Like, that's just, like, a play – or a rule in the rule book that most people didn't know existed.
Yeah.
You know, the Panthers and John Casey kicking it out of bounds after the Panthers tied it up. And giving Brady, like, he only has to go, like, what, like 25 yards to get into Vinny Terry's range. Stuff like that. Like, the Seahawks passing the ball at the, you know, at the one. Robert Alford dropping that pass that would have won the game for the Falcons in the 28-3 comeback.
Yeah, and that Falcons Super Bowl for the Patriots was by far, like, I thought Tom Brady's most impressive performance as a quarterback. And even there, like, the Julian Edelman catch is insane. And there's also a fucking tipped pass at the line of scrimmage that just somehow bounced into Martellus Bennett's hands and I think was maybe on a third down and ended up turning into a first. Like, it was like, oh, man.
No, yeah. They it really does feel like they have had the usual retort to calling out the Patriots' luck is saying, well, you know, what about the luck that the Giants had against them, like the, you know, the David Tyree catch or like the Mario Manningham catch. Not luck, by the way, that's skill, but the David Tyree catch, sure. But when you're, when you're a team that scored like 40 points per game in 2007 and you're locked in a 17-14 game with the Giants, that, you know, whatever happens at that point.
Yeah, so it's like – I don't know. I obviously like have a lot of fun, you know, making fun of it and shitting on it on my YouTube channel, but it's like, I think it's interesting just to, and it happens every season at this point for the last 3 years, because I've been in the Super Bowl every year. So it just re-sparks it. And it's like a ongoing stupid debate that nobody's ever going to win. And people are just going to eventually submit to. So hopefully, you know, in 10 years, there's some other quarterback that people are saying the same shit about. If there's not, then maybe.
I don't know if I like that answer or that option already. Quarterback in 10 years who people will be saying is the greatest of all time. So I already
what
know.
What if there's a quarterback who wins 10 Super Bowls in a row?
As long as it's not the guy he played on Sunday.
It's not going to be. There's no team out there that's going to be coached as well.
That's the thing is the real, you know, annoying part about the Brady, you know, the ritual ball sucking of Tom Brady after one of these wins and him going back to the Super Bowl every single fucking year is nobody says a word about Sony Michel rushing for 100 yards in the last two games and a total of 5 touchdowns, or the fact that his offensive line gave up 0 sacks in those two games.
Yeah.
Or, you know, his defense holding the Chiefs to 0 points in the first half, or his defense, you know, doing whatever against the Chargers. Like, you know, it's a team
game. Patrick Mahomes doing him a huge favor by overthrowing Damian Williams wide open in the end zone.
Like, yeah, it's just
– like, if the Chiefs score a touchdown there, they win that game. If that roughing the passer
If D Ford is lined up 3 inches behind where he was, you know, that ball gets intercepted, and Brady all of a sudden has a 1-touchdown, 3-interception game and blew a 14-0 lead with a chance to go to the Super Bowl.
Right. It's a completely different narrative. It's that, well, that's what's funny. Yeah. It's like, it's just all these little things when you look at it, and it's, I guess that's what makes sports so great though. Debate it and break it down a whole bunch of different ways. But like, we're sitting here talking about that, and that wasn't even the most controversial thing from the weekend. The roughing the passer call in the Rams-Saints game. That was
the pass interference.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, pass interference.
The passer was on Brady, which we didn't talk about either, but yeah.
The pass interference, no call. That has to be the worst no call I've ever seen in an important game.
Yeah.
Like, does anything come to mind, like, that cost a team something so big, even though, like, there's two ways to look at it, because the Saints did they had chance after that to, one, stop the Rams from getting a field goal, and then they got the ball first in overtime. So it's hard to not put it on the Saints, but the call, if it's called correctly, they win that game. Unless something crazy happens.
There's no question about it.
Because they probably would have just scored a touchdown. They would just hand off to Mark Ingram and score a touchdown there.
Yeah, no. I'm just going to go ahead and assume that if they call that correctly, then either they run the clock down to like 5 seconds and kick a field goal, or they just walk into the end zone.
So my question to you is, regardless of whether you think it's right or wrong, Would you like to see the rematch starting from a minute 40 of that game?
Well, does it
like, start right now? If you got to vote for yes for a minute 40 replay or no, just move on, what would you vote?
Okay, so well, are we taking out? I'll take out the my bias as someone who wanted to see the Rams win.
Yeah, you got to take that out. I'm talking about just like a football perspective.
So does this happen after the penalty and they call the penalty, or is that play just like taken out?
No,
they call the penalty.
That's another good question. Do you replay that down? I think it makes it more interesting if you replay the 3rd and 10.
Right. So yeah, it's like, would Saints fans, you know, because they're not, you know, if they assess the penalty and they call it correctly on the redo, it would just start with the clock running first and goal, that would be boring because then they just like take a knee three times and then kick a field goal. And that the game's probably over there. But yeah, if you redo the, I'll watch that. If you redo that third down or second down or whatever it was, the pass to Tommy Lee Lewis, that would be very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be like the worst thing the NFL could do. But
I agree. Yeah,
I would fucking love it if it happened.
Of course. Yeah. No, it'd just be like, you'd have like 2 hours of pregame, yeah, probably more than that. You have like 5 hours of pregame for like 12 minutes of football.
Yeah. But like you could just get less than 2 minutes of a football game.
Yeah. And everybody who was at the game who bought tickets gets to come back in for free. And like Troy Aikman and Joe Buck, like do their whole like intro again, just going back to like introducing second and 10.
Oh man. I think it was early in that game. It was like Buck asked Troy Aikman what he would do. And I forgot to talk about it, but he was like, no, I wouldn't do this here. And then the team did it and had success. Because
the same exact thing that happened the week before.
Right. I meant for us to talk about in the episode or like text you because I thought it was fucking hilarious. But whatever Troy Aikman says,
opposite. You do the opposite.
Yeah.
You do the opposite. Yeah. No, he's turning into Mike Carey from a couple years ago when he was the like one of the first guys to be like the official that called in to the broadcast. Yeah. And gave his opinion on replays, and he was
kept getting them wrong
every single time, like culminating in the Super Bowl with that Jericho Cotchery catch non-catch that he said, this looks like a catch. I'm going to say this is a Panthers first down. I was like, well, I think we're in, that's a good sign for us. And then, of course, Von Miller strips the ball a play later.
Yeah, that was a big call.
That was. That was, and I'm glad we had Mike Carey to turn the tide for us.
That's right.
But, yeah, of course I'd love to see this. This would be when would you do it? Like, would you do it the week before the Super Bowl?
It would have to – no, they would have to do it tomorrow night, Thursday night football.
Oh.
Got to give the winner appropriate amount of time to prepare. Yep.
Yeah. Thinking about that. Yeah, no, I can't see any downside. I want to see this.
Would you be open to reviewing the pass interference call in the final 2 minutes of the game? Because yeah, I think reviewing it like through an entire game is a little silly. And maybe just consider like making it a 10-yard penalty if you do it instead of the spot foul. If people really – I don't know. I think it's a weird – it's always been a weird rule. Like that.
It is, yeah.
But
it feels like it's a huge advantage for the offense.
Yeah.
And guys like Joe Flacco made a career out of exploiting that.
Throwing it deep, getting that call. Yeah.
Maybe we might want to think about Flacco now at this point. Now that I think about it, especially if pass interference is reviewable.
You see the Broncos from like 2015 have the worst touchdown to interception ratio of any team in the league.
That does not surprise me.
It's like 77 touchdowns and 71 interceptions.
Not great. So,
there's a big giant window into their number one problem. It is quarterback.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that.
What's really interesting is that there's been a bunch of other teams do worse than them every year.
Yes. Yeah, no, it never feels like they're the worst at quarterback, and yet, no, I think the 2015 season really masked a lot of that.
Yeah.
I think people forget how bad Peyton Manning was for, like, stretches in that season. Most of it's just because of that Chiefs game. If you take that Chiefs game out, like, they're probably, like, middle of the pack.
Yeah, half his picks came in that fucking game.
I know. Yeah, and I think Brock Osweiler threw one too. So
yeah, no, he did.
It's like five whole picks that game. Yeah, I've taken out most of the Chiefs games over the last 3 years. I think the Broncos are like probably in the top 10 and just teams overall.
Yeah, that was the best part of that being over. Are all the fucking Broncos fans who just.
Oh yeah.
If you wanted,
we should talk about this.
If you wanted the Patriots to lose and you were a Bronco fan, you were the biggest piece of shit on earth.
Right. Yeah. No. Which I think. Which. All right. We openly disagreed about this. The week before.
In a civil way, might I add? Yes.
I think so. Yeah. I didn't call you an asshole like certain people on Twitter.
I didn't think you liked football any less. I didn't think you liked the Broncos any less.
Agree. I just had, and you know, other people in my family that root for the Broncos have the same exact take as you.
Yeah, and it's what's funny is like you see the worst of your fan base rise to the top of your social media platforms, and these people who are like, I can't, the argument that I think is really ironic is Broncos fans shitting on other Broncos fans saying, I can't stand to imagine what Chiefs fans would be like on social media. They would be bigger pieces of shit than Patriots fans. All while those Broncos fans are being real pieces of shit to other Broncos fans. That's what when I was like, step back and like, okay, stop feeling bad about people telling you you're an asshole and just like observe this. He's like, these are the shitty people that other fan bases interact with their shitty people. Because my experience on social media, for the most part, with Chiefs fans, with Patriots fans, is actually pretty good. Like, people are like, I'm a Chiefs fan, but I love your channel. I'm a Patriots fan, and I come here every week just to watch you cry or whatever. It's like, fine. Like, that's all part of what it's about. But And I'm sure if you dig in, you can find all the assholes. But I think all fan bases have the exact same amount of assholery. But once your team starts to get successful.
I would disagree with that.
Jacksonville Jaguars fans are never bad. LA Rams fans are never bad because you don't see them.
Right.
But, like, teams that win a lot, you get a bunch of cocky people on the internet who suck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I think Boston's a special case just because Boston and the whole New England, like, they just have this, like, they feel like they're more important than the rest of the U.S. dating back to the Revolutionary War, I think. Like, seriously, like, I think it's just, like, it's just bred into them that, like, we're the people that, you know, took responsibility for the Boston Tea Party. We're the people that freed this country from the British Empire. And therefore, like, we're a class above everybody else in this country.
You think they have New York City inferiority complex?
There's probably a little bit of that, too. Yeah. And they, like, all have this Goodwill Hunting complex where, you know, they think they're the Will Hunting of their own lives. And it turns out there's another asshole from Dorchester. And then you combine that with the fact that, you know, Boston's had a million championships in just this, you know, last 20 years alone. And they become pretty insufferable.
When you get that much success, it changes you. And that's like my whole argument for not wanting to see that, you know, the Patriots in a Super Bowl again.
But I think that's our argument too with the Chiefs, is that we don't want to see them taste a little bit of success and let it go to their heads too. I just didn't want to give the Chiefs fan an inch, because they'd spin it even to like a Chiefs fan even going to the Super Bowl is a win for them, you know.
See, that's where I have a bigger heart than you.
I think you might be right.
I think they would have lost the Super Bowl though. I think the Chiefs would have lost the Super Bowl.
I disagree. I disagree there. Yeah, I think I have more faith in the Rams to beat the Patriots than the Chiefs. Even though it doesn't make sense because the Rams.
Yeah, see, I don't feel good about the Rams playing the Patriots.
Yeah, we'll see. We've got plenty of time to talk about that.
We've
got plenty of time to talk about that.
Let
me ask you about this, though. We talked about quarterbacks related to the Broncos, though. Does it worry you at all? Because I know you're not a big college football guy. You're not, like, a huge draft guy either. Not that I am, but, like, I'm aware of all these players. Does it worry you when a guy like Drew Lock, his stock seems to rise, like, just with, like, a press conference at the senior?
No, that shit definitely.
Does that, like, scare you?
It just makes me realize, like, how much these people in the NFL making crazy important monetary decisions are just guessing like any other average asshole. You know what I mean? Like, don't get me wrong. There are NFL scouts out there who work their ass off, who are traveling all over the country, evaluating these people, doing a really good job. But when it comes down to it, it's like John Elway's going to make the call on which quarterback it is. And I would argue I might watch more football than John Elway because I've seen Instagram videos from his son when it's like a 3-day weekend. They're up in Tahoe and I'm working on football videos all weekend. I'm like,
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would be doing the same fucking thing. I'm not knocking Elway for doing it, but like it's just another – you get into these powerful positions because you were a great athlete and a great businessman. But like, yeah, Drew Locke, look, he threw some good balls at the Senior Bowl.
It wasn't even that though. It's just like – it was like he – I don't know. He talked to the media without, you know, pooping his pants.
Oh, yeah. I like the way he handled himself.
What the fuck?
And, you know, sure, maybe some of those answers were canned, but then I talked to him off of that. He just seems like a kind of guy who loves football, loves it. I don't know.
It's I would hope so.
Just give me the guy who looks like he played the best football in college.
I don't care. Like, it's all right. Here's the one thing I do know about the draft. Like, I don't purport to be some type of a draft guy or anything, or draft expert. I'm not one of those guys on Twitter that makes mock drafts. But one thing I do know is that, like, the most important thing over everything else, really the only thing that matters, is just watching their college tape.
Yeah.
If you just look at their college tape, and if you've watched it all, by the time they're done playing and before the draft process starts, and you put a grade on someone and be like, all right, this guy is like a middle of the first round type of guy, and suddenly by the time the draft rolls around and he's, you know, boosted himself to a top five guy, it's time to be suspicious because you're rising based on something that's, you know, unrelated to football, which is usually like you're just raw athleticism, or you test well, or like you have, you know, you're able to talk to people well in interviews. Like, it's just stuff that doesn't matter. And that's really what scares me, because it especially affects quarterbacks. Like, no other position really, people don't really care. Like, if you're, you know, a defensive tackle that has a good press conference, it's just quarterbacks for some reason. And I guess it's because, like, you know, you need this guy to be the face of your franchise.
Yeah, there is probably something like the likability and sellability of that. But it's like, yeah, quarterback,
it shouldn't, you know.
No, it shouldn't.
You should leapfrog someone that far.
Right. You should see, are they accurate on the field? Are they accurate under pressure? What kind of offense were they running? How do they communicate to you that they understand what the fuck they're doing out there? And hand size, obviously.
Yes. No, I don't really care about that. As long as you
nobody
don't, like,
should fucking care. Unless, like, they have a small hand,
like,
and they fumbled
hands.
A bunch of times in college.
Yeah, maybe that's – yeah. And you find out, they've been playing with, like, a junior football, and they just got away with it for 3 years. Shout out Tom Brady.
The one thing that still blows my mind is that they think they can fix accuracy coming into the NFL. Like, I've never seen that work.
Yeah, I don't know. There's people that are like, accuracy is just like a God-given trait, and then there's people that think you can drill accuracy. Like, I don't know. Like, I think you can fix footwork, which makes you more accurate as a result. But then again, it's like, why? All right, so Cam Newton's, you know, 8 years into his NFL career, 8-9 years into his NFL career, it's like he still doesn't, like, throw with good footwork or anything, and he's like, he's super inaccurate some of the time.
Yeah.
And it's like,
exactly.
I don't know. Like, I imagine, like, people have been trying to coach him on that for the entire time he's been with the Panthers, but I don't know.
Maybe probably been trying to coach him on that since high school if they're a fucking quarterback.
Yeah, I know.
And like, if they haven't learned, like, it says there, because there's a couple things there. Maybe they didn't have great coaching, and that's where some of their accuracy issues are, and you can clean it up a little bit in technique. But if it's a big problem, they're not going to go from being Paxton Lynch to, you know, Joe Montana. or Aaron Rodgers, right? Like Aaron Rodgers was accurate in college, got more accurate in the NFL. The other issue is like that person playing quarterback hasn't taken the initiative to already fix that problem. You know what I mean? So that should worry you about how he's going to prepare for NFL games.
Right. And like up until college, I think it's fair to say like, all right, we can turn this guy around. Because like, if you watch shows like QB1, which is like a really interesting show on Netflix, by the way, it's about high school quarterbacks. But like, you can see like the disparity in high school programs. Like you can have high school teams that are run like college teams.
Yeah.
And there are other high school teams that are run like, you know, like Pop Warner teams. That are just like playing in like the swamps somewhere as practice. And like coaching really, like you don't really get elite level coaching for most of these guys until they go to college. And then I think there's probably a lot of fine tuning at the NFL level, but that's why you don't draft a guy who's not like a finished product.
Right. In
the first round, especially at quarterback. I mean, if you're going to take a guy like in the fourth or fifth round, you know, be my guest at that point, you're sort of taking flyers and
yeah,
you know, the return is worth more than the risk that you put into it. But it scares me, you know, and I think people every time this year, they fall into the same trap. They get this sort of hive mind around one single guy who like he was never on the radar during the season. Either because like his program wasn't winning, which is kind of the case of Drew Lock, which I don't know how much like stock you put into that. Like I don't know if you can expect him to take a Missouri team in the SEC and make them relevant all of a sudden just out of his play. But you want to like see him win some big games, and then all of a sudden like he's a bigger name than Drew Haskins. What's his name? Dwayne Haskins. He threw 50 touchdowns and played in the Rose Bowl and won the Rose Bowl. And Kyler Murray, who won the Heisman and played in the college football playoff. It's very concerning.
Why?
And I don't want, especially because the Broncos are at 10 and now they're talking about them possibly trading up to get a guy like Drew Lock.
Why? Like if they really have to jump the Giants essentially, right?
Yeah.
Is the thinking.
You got the Giants, the Jaguars, and the Redskins.
Oh, they're all ahead of the Broncos?
I think – I'm not sure where the Redskins are, but they're at least like a team that you have to worry about trading at. You've also got the Dolphins.
Yeah.
A lot of teams that will be – like the top five, maybe not. But, you know, you got teams from like 5 to 15 that you have to worry about. Buccaneers as well.
Interesting. I don't know what I would do.
Yeah, I think especially with my plan all along, I think is stick with Keenan because you signed him for 2 years. If one of these guys falls to pick, you know, 42, wherever the Broncos are picking in the second round, yeah, not very likely, but, you know, or if one of them just like has a big slide and you want to trade back into the first round, that's more acceptable, I think. But especially when you took a guy like Vic Fangio to be your head coach, which indicates to me that you're going to make defense a big priority moving forward. And there's a ton of value because of these quarterbacks who it's been, you know, widely admitted that it's not a very good draft class for quarterbacks. So you're going to have a lot of defensive guys that fall as a result of quarterbacks going high just because they're quarterbacks and not because they're good players. You can get a lot of value for a good defensive player at 10 and put him in a good scheme.
Yeah, they need a corner there. So
yeah, and there's three good corners that could go at 10.
Yeah. I'll be happy with a corner at 10 and a quarterback in the second round. You know, especially if they sign Aaron Rodgers, as everybody projected. Like if the Broncos can get Aaron Rodgers, but also like a guy to go behind Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, an Aaron Rodgers
and even keep Case Keenum. Like, if they could have Aaron Rodgers and then Case Keenum as backup and then draft a guy, I'd feel safe finally, I think.
Right. Yeah, and there's a thing, too. It's like Even if you take a guy in the second round or like anywhere from second to like the fifth round, who's like a guy you're just like, you're not going to cut right away, kind of as a guarantee at quarterback. You know, how valuable is a backup quarterback too? Like, they're pretty valuable.
Yeah, we've seen that recently.
We've seen that with the Eagles. Like, that's a position that you you want to be able to, you know, get you through like a month.
If you can win with your backup quarterback, you're gonna be a successful team.
Right, like the Broncos took Brock Osweiler in the second round in 2012, ended up paying off in 2015, even though he left the year after. But you wouldn't just be like literally just because of that, you know, whatever 7-game stint in 2015, you would call that a successful pick, I think. Back in 2012.
Yeah, that's interesting to think about. No, I mean, without him, well, yeah. Imagine if that guy that came in was Russell Wilson, you know?
Another thought. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess I'm just talking about, like, the idea of taking one there.
No, I know. Like, you never know.
Right.
It's, Dak Prescott was third round. Russell Wilson was third round. Brock Osweiler, second round. Paxton Lynch, first round. Chad Kelly, seventh round. I still think he should be on the team. I don't know.
Yeah, that's another thought for the offseason.
Okay, we'll end with this thought.
Okay.
Because the report came out this weekend that teams are considering signing Kareem Hunt, right?
Right, yeah. So I know where you're going with this, and I was thinking the same exact thing.
So why would you not try Chad Kelly out? Besides the fact that he's fucked up more times than you can count, like the last fuck up, he didn't hurt anybody.
Like as far as we know, he's never hurt anybody.
He's just threatened
his fuck ups. He threatened to hurt a lot of people. That's not the same as hurting a lot of people. You could argue he was the victim the last time he got hurt.
Yeah.
The victim of a brutal vacuum cleaner assault back in October after their Halloween party. So, I mean,
everybody should
get a second chance.
If that didn't happen, he would have played this season.
Yeah, he absolutely would have.
And he looks like he could be a guy to win you games, but whatever. So, next week, we'll do our Super Bowl predictions. We'll dive into that matchup. If anything crazy happens with the Broncos, we'll talk about that. But next week should be mostly about the Super Bowl. And we'll just brace for ways to prepare for the Patriots to win again. That's all I can recommend.
Yeah, let's hope not. But break class in case of worst scenario.
Yep. All right, thanks for listening. Bye.